Sunday, 8th of Jan. Oh, God, why am I so unattractive? Cannot believe I convinced myself I was keeping the entire weekend free to work when, in fact, I was on permanent date with Daniel's standby. Hideous. Wasted 2 days glaring psychopathically at the phone and eating things. Why hasn't he rung? Why? 8 p.m. Phone call alert! Which turned out to be just Tom asking if there was any telephonic progress. Tom, who has taken unflatteringly to calling himself a hag fag, has been sweetly supportive about the Daniel crisis. Tom has a theory that homosexuals and single women in their 30s have natural bonding, both being accustomed to disappointing their parents and being treated as freaks by society. He indulged me while I obsessed to him about my unattractiveness crisis, precipitated, as I told him, first by bloody Mark Darcy, then by bloody Daniel, at which point he said, "Mark Darcy? But isn't he that famous lawyer, the human rights guy?" 11 p.m. It is far too late for Daniel to ring, V sad and traumatised. Monday, 9th of January. Nightmare day in office. Watched the door for Daniel all morning. Nothing. By 11:45 a.m. I was seriously alarmed. Then Perpetua suddenly bellowed into the phone. "Daniel? He's gone to a meeting in Croydon. He'll be in tomorrow." She banged the phone down and said, "Got all these bloody girls ringing him up." Panic-stricken, I reached for the silk cut. Which girls? Somehow I made it through the day, got home, and in a moment of insanity left a message on Daniel's answer phone saying, "Oh no, I can't believe I did this. Hi, it's Jones here. I was just wondering how you are and if you wanted to meet for the Skirt Health Summit like you said." Tuesday, 10th of January. Slunk into office, crippled with embarrassment about the message. Suddenly, message pending flashed up on top of my computer screen. "Message Jones. Thanks for your phone call. Cleve." My heart sank. That phone call was suggesting a date. Who replies by saying thanks and leaves it at that unless they... But after a little thought, I sent back. "Message Cleve. Please shut up. I'm very busy and important. Jones." After a few minutes more, he replied, "Message Jones. Sorry to interrupt, Jones. Pressure must be hellish. I like your tits in that top. Cleve." And we were off. Frantic messaging continued all week, culminating in him suggesting a date for Sunday night and me dizzyingly, euphorically accepting. Is it just me, or is Sunday a bizarre night for a first date? All wrong, like Saturday morning or Monday at 2 p.m. Sunday, 15th of January, 6 p.m. Completely exhausted by entire day of date preparation. Being a woman is worse than being a farmer. There's so much harvesting and crop spraying to be done. Legs to be waxed, underarms shaved, eyebrows plucked, feet pumiced, skin exfoliated and moisturised, spots cleansed, roots dyed, eyelashes tinted, nails filed, cellulite massaged, stomach muscles exercised. Ugh, the whole performance is so highly tuned you only need to neglect it for a few days for the whole thing to go to seed. Sometimes I wonder what I would be like if left to revert to nature. With a full beard and handlebar moustache on each shin. Dennis Healy eyebrows. Face a graveyard of dead skin cells. Spots erupting. Long, curly fingernails like Struvelpeter. Blind as a bat and stupid runt of species. As no contact lenses. Flabby body flobbering around. Ugh. Is it any wonder girls have no confidence? 7 p.m. Cannot believe this has happened. On the way to the bathroom, I noticed the answer phone light was flashing. Daniel. "Look, Jones, I'm really sorry. I think I'm going to have to give tonight a miss. I've got a presentation at 10 in the morning and a pile of 45 spreadsheets to get through." Do not believe it. I'm stood up. Monday, 16th of January. 10:30 a.m. Office. Daniel is still locked in his meeting. Maybe it was a genuine excuse. 1 p.m. Just saw Daniel leaving for lunch. He has not messaged me or anything. V depressed. Going shopping. 11:50 p.m. Just had dinner with Tom in Harvey Nichols' fifth floor, who was obsessing about a pretentious-sounding freelance filmmaker called Jerome. Moaned to him about Daniel. Tom said not to be paranoid. Give it time. But I could tell he was not concentrating and only wanted to talk about Jerome as was suffused with sex lust. Tuesday, 24th of January. Heaven-sent day. At 5:30, like a gift from God, Daniel appeared, sat himself on the edge of my desk, took out his diary and murmured, "How are you fixed for Friday?" "Yes, yes!" Friday, 27th of January. Huh. Had dream date at an in-time little Genoan restaurant near Daniel's flat. Right. I'll get a taxi, I blurted awkwardly as we stood in the street afterwards. Then he lightly brushed a hair from my forehead, took my cheek in his hand and kissed me, urgently, desperately. After a while, he held me hard against him and whispered throatily, "I don't think you'll be needing that taxi, Jones." The second we were inside his flat, we fell upon each other like beasts, shoes, jackets strewn in a trail across the room. "I don't think this skirt is looking at all well," he murmured. "I think it should lie down on the floor." As he started to undo the zip, he whispered, "This is just a bit of fun, okay? I didn't think we should start getting involved." Then, caveat in place, he carried on with the zip. Had it not been for Sharon and the fact I'd just drunk the best part of a bottle of wine by then, I would have sunk powerless into his arms. As it was, I leapt to my feet, pulling up my skirt. "That is such crap," I slurred. "How dare you be so fraudulently flirtatious, cowardly and dysfunctional? I'm not interested in emotional fuckwittage. Goodbye." It was great. You should have seen his face. But now I am home, I'm sunk into gloom. February. Wednesday, the 1st of February. Spent the weekend struggling to remain disdainfully buoyant after the Daniel fuckwittage debacle. I kept saying the words self-respect over and over till I was dizzy, trying to barrage out, "But I love him." I rang Tom. "Just you watch," he warned. "He'll be gagging for it now. Gagging." "No, he won't," I said sadly. "I've blown it." On Sunday, went for huge, lard-smeared lunch at my parents'. Mother is bright orange and more opinionated than ever, having just returned from a week in Albufeira with Una Alcombre and Audrey Coles. Mum had been to church and suddenly realised in a St Paul on the road to Damascus type blinding flash that the vicar is gay. "It's just laziness, darling," was her view on the whole homosexuality issue. "They simply can't be bothered to relate to the opposite sex. Look at your Tom. I really think if that boy had anything about him, he'd be going out with you properly instead of all this ridiculous friends nonsense." "Mother," I said, "Tom has known he was a homosexual since he was 10. "Oh, darling, honestly, you know how these people get these silly ideas. You can always talk them out of it." "Does that mean if I talk to you really persuasively, you'd leave Dad and start an affair with Auntie Audrey?" "Now, you're just being silly, darling," she said. "Exactly," Dad joined in. "Auntie Audrey looks like a kettle." "Oh, for heaven's sake, Colin," Mum snapped, which struck me as odd, as she doesn't usually snap at Dad. My dad, somewhat bizarrely, insisted on giving my car a full service before I left. "Have you noticed anything odd about your mother?" he said in a stiff, embarrassed way as he fiddled around with the oil stick, wiping it with rags and plunging it back in a not unwearying manner, if one were a Freudian. I racked my brains. I can't say I did, to be honest, other than seeming very sort of blooming and confident. "Hmm," he said. "Anyway, best get off before it gets dark."